Seventh case this morning, Britton Dillon versus Astria. Mr. Rose.
Good morning. My name is Ashley Rose. I represented the plaintiff in the district court, and I am the move-ant in this court. This court reviews the district court's denial of each of fees on the basis of an abuse of discretion. I would contend that the district court abused its discretion by concluding that the ALJ's ultimate conclusion was not erroneous as a matter of law. He states that specifically in his decision on in the appendix 30A, page 2. Now, the reason why I believe that this is an abuse of discretion is that the reasons that the court gave for claiming that the ALJ's conclusions were not erroneous as a matter of law were based upon the ALJ's failure to explain why he gave little weight to an X-ray or radiological evidence that could have favored the claimant's position. The court also noted that the ALJ discounted the treating doctor's diagnosis of an annular tear at L4 S1, which certainly could have been the basis for Ms. Britton Dillon's complaints of pain and would also have had some impact upon her functional abilities. The district court seemed to indicate that that was not particularly significant, although the treating doctor's evidence is certainly entitled to controlling weight, as long as it's not inconsistent with other evidence in the record. The court also noted that the ALJ had failed to undertake a detailed narrative discussion regarding his residual functional capacity assessment at Step 4 and his application at Step 5. Now, those are failures in terms of ALJ's decisions, which seem to fly in the face of established precedent, and not only established precedent by this court, but also the commissioner's own regulations and rulings, which helped the ALJs to understand and implement those ruling those regulations. As a consequence, when the district court seems to indicate that that the ALJ had summarized all of the medical evidence, but summarization is not the same thing as actually digging in and analyzing the medical evidence and applying that analysis to the functional limitations that the claimant has, to which that a claimant has testified. Accordingly, then, when the government claims that it had a substantially justified position because it had what it claims to have a genuine dispute, then the question is, a genuine dispute over what? The ALJ has not given the full analysis that would give anybody, including this court or the district court itself, a reasonable basis to find what that dispute was about. Accordingly, what I believe is that if the district court's assertion that the ALJ's decision is not erroneous as a matter of law, then the district court's conclusion allows ALJs to avoid substantial requirements that are imposed by this court, the commissioner, the regulations and rulings, and I've cited numbers of those in my brief. If the court has no questions, I would...
Thank you, Mr. Rose.
Thank you.
Good morning, John Martin on behalf of the commissioner. Mr. Rose has again done exactly what he did in his brief. He has explained why this decision should have gone back, why the district court correctly remanded the case and asked the ALJ to take another look at it. What he has not explained is why the district court abused its discretion in finding the government substantially justified and in declining to award equal access to justice fees in the state.
The remand was just for a more complete explanation on a couple of discrete points, right?
Exactly right.
It wasn't because the ALJ got everything wrong in terms of the mode of articulation of the decision.
That's correct. In fact, the district court wrote a very comprehensive decision in remanding this case. I think that decision is 32 pages long. And I think 20 pages of it are devoted just to the medical evidence itself. This is a person who had complaints of pain, and like a lot of the claimants in these Social Security cases, the doctors are finding a few things on X-ray or a few things on other objective studies, and they're saying, I don't really think that's the cause of her pain. So it's a complex case in that, and there are a number of objective studies in this. So the fact that the ALJ, and the court was very specific about this, the ALJ did not ignore any evidence. They just wanted the ALJ to explain why he didn't find, for example, that evidence of the annular tear convincing, or why he didn't find that a decisive factor. But they were very clear in that the ALJ discussed this. So this is not a case like the Golombewski case, where the court did award EJA fees and said the reason that we thought the government abused its discretion in that case was because there was significant evidence here and the ALJ ignored it. Here, the court very distinctly said in both its merits decision and its equal access to justice decision that the ALJ looked at all the evidence. They just want him to, as they say, build a more logical bridge or connect the dots a little better. And as the court observed, in no case have EJA fees been awarded under those circumstances. So I would just say exactly what the district court said. In his EJA brief, plaintiff has not, or appellee has not shown why the court abused its discretion or why the government was not substantially justified. He has not done so today. He has not addressed the standard. The standard here is different. When they're deciding whether to remand the case or not, the standard is substantial evidence. The district court correctly found that the ALJ did not satisfy that standard. However, when deciding substantial justification in an equal access to justice case, the standard is substantial justification. On all the precedents, and we cited them in our brief, there is no case in all the cases. This case is like Cunningham, it's like Stein, it's like Frost, and it's like Thuvino. And I would also point out that Thuvino raises a very high bar for an appellee to meet in these cases, because Thuvino says when it's the very same judge who found for the claimant in the merits decision, when that judge finds against the claimant in the equal access to justice system, it's very difficult to show that the district court abused its discretion. So I would ask that the court affirm the district court decision denying EJA fees in this case. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Rose, do you have anything further?
Really just one point. It appears that Judge Mason gave the ALJ a pass. These elements that I have called to your attention, that the district court said the ALJ failed to explain, are really not elements of harmless error. In any one of those cases, or all of them put together, the outcome of the case could be different. And since the court gave the ALJ a pass, this court can't determine, without going into the evidence and becoming an ALJ itself, what the outcome should be. Therefore, I think that my initial indication that the ALJ's, that the district court's statement that the fact that that the ALJ's ultimate conclusion was not erroneous as a matter of law is, in fact, an abuse of discretion. Thank you.
Thanks to both counsel. Case is taken under advisement. I move to the